accept it that soon you'll be drenched.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct on Devil Radio. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has just struck down and blocked Biden's extension of a federal moratorium on evictions, which had been extended by Biden till October 1. It expired August 1. And there's a lot of concern about people just being evicted en masse. So he extended it to October 1. Supreme Court just struck that down. Here are their grounds. They said that if there's going to be an eviction moratorium, it's got to be passed by Congress and not issued by the health department, as they put it, referring to the CDC, Center for Disease Control, because of the resurgence of the virus. Now, let's unpack this. There's a little more history to this, a little more policy than meets the eye. And here is the tension and the dilemma. There are lots of big landlords with thousands of units, but there are also lots of landlords with 4 units, or 8 units, or 2 units, maybe 1 unit. Sometimes they own a duplex and they rent out the other part of the duplex. Under this moratorium, it did not matter whether the tenant could afford to pay the rent. And I know owners of rental properties. One owned a four unit, the other one just a single rental property, a house. And the minute the extension went in last year, some of them stopped paying rent. They could afford the rent, though. These were not poor people. They're people with decent jobs. But the landlord had to continue to pay property taxes, continue to repair the roof, continue to hire a plumber if there was a clog of some sort, paint the property, maintain it. Now, in this case, those landlords could absorb that, cost them a lot of money. But then part of the moratorium had money for landlords. So there was a fund, but it required the tenant to apply for it. And one of these tenants, actually several of them, refused to sign the document. So why the hell should I care about that? Why should I care about that? They're irresponsible. So the landlord is at the mercy of the tenant. This is a small landlord. There have been reports of some landlords going bankrupt, people abandoning their property, not maintaining them, and so on. It seems to me that the best way to have handled this, but it's expired now anyway, and Congress is not going to pass one. It would pass the House, but in the Senate, unless they did it by budget reconciliation, which they won't, it'll be filibustered. And if they did do it by budget reconciliation, it would require Manchin and Sinema to go along. I don't know if they would. But if there is another one through Congress, there's, to me, a simple fix, which is this. You don't have a presumptive blanket moratorium eviction. What you have is, if you're a tenant who can't afford to pay the rent, you go down to the HUD office and you show them a very simple sheet of your income and your savings. And the presumption then will be, if there's a problem, you get the moratorium. But if you go down there and you're making $90,000 a year and you have $20,000 in the bank, there should not be a moratorium. Absolutely not be a moratorium. Because now a lot of these landlords are going to have a year's rent coming. And what? They're going to hire a lawyer at $300 an hour to go in and sue the tenants for $15,000. Some tenants move. I think the presumption in everybody's mind was that tenants are all in good faith. Many are, but many are not. That they'd sign the paperwork needed to get their landlord's money and pay their rent, that they'd be responsible. That has not been the case with a lot of them. So the Supreme Court decision on its face isn't all that remarkable, saying Congress can do it, just that the CDC can't. But that presumes that Congress is in good faith. And none of the Republicans will vote for this because they don't care, and they're for the landlords, including all landlords, not all of whom are good, although many of them are, especially the small landlords. So stand by in that one. See, the one thing that this moratorium was intended to address is the obvious. There's an estimate there may be several million people that truly can't afford to pay the rent. If you expel several million people and throw them out on the street, you know, there will be some cities that are affluent that may come up with some kind of a help to help pay the rent. But by and large, you cannot have a society where there are families roaming the streets. They have that in Mexico City. They have that in parts of South America, and they have that in India. And even if you're a wealthy person or somebody in the middle class, you have to live in a degraded society where you see suffering right in front of your eyes. Now that suffering is alleviated to some extent by subsidizing people's housing, by, in this case, the eviction moratorium. And it's based on the fact that a lot of people can't find work. Now there are jobs, I get it. There are a lot of jobs at somewhere between $10 and $15 an hour, and many of them being taken. All of the studies show that the increased unemployment compensation benefits did not deter people from taking work. People want to work. But with a lot of them, where the schools are closed and everybody's on Zoom, there's a single mom with a couple of kids at home, no childcare, how's she going to work? She's already working hard in the home. That is why, in my view, a moratorium is essential. You cannot dump families out on the street, but you can't let cheaters in there cheat landlords either. You cannot let cheaters in there cheat landlords. And that is what occurred in some cases. So stand by. We'll see what happens. In any event, October 1st, by the way, is only about a month away, a little over a month away. And it was going to expire then anyway. And then what happens? We get back to where we were before, which there were evictions, including the people who couldn't pay the rent. And that's why there's got to be some kind of rational rental assistance that's designed to keep families off the street, but at the same time, not enable cheaters to cheat their landlords. Well, the Canadian Federal Minister for Gender Equity, believe it or not, there is one, Marianne Mousseff. She is an Iranian who was raised in Afghanistan, emigrated to Canada, and is now in the cabinet, sent a message calling the Taliban our brothers. And the whole thing was, quote, "I want this opportunity to speak with our brothers, the Taliban. We call on you to ensure a safe passage of anybody who wants to get out of the country." Now, the problem in Canada right now, you know, they also had a woman from Bahrain who's the head of one of their biggest civil rights organizations, who in the last several months, believe it or not, more than 50 Catholic and Anglican churches have been burned in arsons in rural areas of Canada. And she tweeted, "Burn it all down," not burn them all down, burn it all down, burn basically the culture that produces, even though it gave her sustenance and it gave her refugee status. We have got to get the message to our allies. You know, Canada has very, very weak immigration rules, and a lot of people simply pour into Canada, and we have a porous border, and this is what you get even at their cabinet level. And that's dead wrong. That is absolutely dead wrong. A jihadist background is unassimilable in this culture, and that is happening in Canada. We're going to get to a lot of other topics today. Obviously, COVID, obviously, Afghanistan. We're going to a break right now. The lines are still open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Will later be fast as the present now? Will later be past? The order is rapidly fading. And the first one now will later be last, 'cause the time.